Everyone needs a little help, even if you have trouble admitting it. You need sales help. It doesn't matter how long you've been in sales. The more you learn, the more you earn. If your sales need help, it's time to consider the Gittimer Learning Academy. It's the fun and easy way to brush up on sales fundamentals and learn new advanced strategies to close your next deal. We've got hundreds of hours of lessons on closing, referrals, prospecting. It's like Jeffrey sitting there right next to you, helping you close your next deal. You won't find a more comprehensive library of sales knowledge that you can actually use. Go to GittimerLearningAcademy.com and sign up for a free demo. Did I mention it's free? Free demo. I like free.
When I see someone that guarantees a response within 24 to 48 hours, I want to kill them. I don't want to deal with that. Kill is maybe a harsh word.
I think what you're saying is you don't want to do business with them.
Same thing. Sell or die.
Where do we start this? An answer doesn't matter. We're having a good time. Right.
He couldn't wait to get in here.
You need sales balls to make sales calls.
I'm tweeting that puppy.
Okay. This is Sell or Die, the only sales podcast on the planet that isn't afraid to say you're either selling or you're dying. Because there's no second place in sales. Win or go hungry. I'm Jeffrey Gittimer, author of The Little Red Book of Selling.
And I'm Jen Glackow, founder of Sales in a New York Minute. And today, we are going to help you sell like hell.
Oh, yeah.
We've got a great guest coming up. But first, we want to introduce you to the one, the only, our man behind the curtain, behind the glass wall.
Wait, it's a glass window.
What? You know, it's a metaphor here. It's okay. Our amazing producer, Mr. Doug Branson. Hey, Doug.
Hello, Jeffrey. Hello, Jennifer. I want to remind everyone they can subscribe to this podcast and share it with their friends on Apple Podcasts, Stitcher, Overcast, wherever you get your podcast. Just search Sell or Die and make sure to leave us a review. We always love getting feedback from the diehards out there.
Five stars or nothing.
That's
Doug
right.
Doug sounds amazing on the mic.
We're the Uber of podcasts. We want a five-star rating.
Except we don't rate you. You only rate us. And don't forget to join us for Motivation Mondays, our live sales meeting on Facebook.com/Jeffrey Gittimer. We put on the podcast feed as well. But if you join us live on Facebook, you get to see us, interact with us, engage with us, ask us questions, or just say hello.
Okie dokie. Let's get to the rest of the show. It's time to sell or die.
Michael Redbord is the VP of Services and Support for HubSpot, where he helps companies shape their marketing plans and online strategies. Before then, he worked directly with customers as an inbound marketing consultant, and he pioneered the HubSpot Academy team, helping provide online education to HubSpot's customer base. Diehards, say hello to Michael. Michael, we are glad you're here.
Yes, we're very glad you're here because we use HubSpot.
Thrilled to be here today. Thrilled to hear that, too. Thanks so much.
We should talk about that, even though you're in Boston and we are not, I am not. I'm from Philly.
Luckily, you're not into sports. We had this conversation before we started the show because I'm a Yankees fan, so that would be bad, but we're good.
I get to sit on the sidelines, so to speak, of the entire sports conversation, which is good or bad. Yeah.
The good news is, though, that everybody who doesn't live in Boston doesn't like Boston teams anyway. Like last year in the Super Bowl, all my friends were calling me up saying, I sure hope the Eagles win the Super Bowl. And I said, that's bullshit. What you hope is that Tom Brady loses. And they go, oh, yeah, you're right.
So
yeah, that's a little bit of a different perspective. Yeah.
Bingo.
Michael, I want to talk about you for a few minutes. You have vast experience at HubSpot, but how did you originally get into sales?
Yeah. So, I mean, I sort of consider myself a sales-oriented, like, customer person, right? And, you know, right out of college, I needed a job, a J-O-B, like a lot of people do. And I got into a role that was a kind of squishily defined one where I had some selling responsibilities. And, you know, I would go on site to clients and I was the guy that would pull up the spreadsheet or the PowerPoint and show them some stuff. But those conversations always end up selling-oriented at the end of the day. And so I really kind of got to enjoy that part of the job. And, you know, as a customer person nowadays, I view it like, how do I turn our customers into, you know, the best sales enablement tool, the best kind of, you know, weapon in a salesperson's toolbox that I can.
So what do you think are your best sales qualities?
For me, I think I'm a really kind of consultative person. I hope I build trust reasonably well. I think almost through being kind of a bad salesperson, genetically speaking, I think people tend to trust me and, you know, they view my candor as something that they can get down with. So that's worked for me pretty well over the years.
I love that.
Oh. In our first few minutes of talking, I actually liked you.
Yeah, me too.
And I thought, so being likable,
oh
I think, yeah, I don't want to hurt your feelings.
Well, no, it's great because you did tell me my hairline was receding too. And
well,
if
Jeffrey makes fun of your hair, that's because he likes you.
Right, exactly.
Oh, great. Good. Yeah.
It's like in a loving kind of way.
Yeah. I mean, mine has already receded. Mine has already gone all the way. Mine has gone all the way off.
It's interesting because a lot of times the best salespeople are actually those trusted advisors, those people who are not in a sales role but who are advising the customer on what to do and how to handle their, you know, whatever it is they're handling.
Yeah, I think I've played a very good role as a second voice due to that, right? Where salespeople bring me in as kind of the counterpoint to their voice.
Yeah. Well, you're
That's
a value
cool.
provider.
Yeah.
Hopefully.
I mean, you're sharing with your customers how they win.
Yeah.
That's what I want to know.
Yeah. I mean, so when we do that, right, like I'll often show up as the person that sort of is, all right, now the rubber's really meeting the road. Tell me how it really is. And honestly, just because it's a different voice speaking from a different perspective, it comes with a lot of authority, which is cool.
Yeah, that is cool. So you work for HubSpot, and a lot of people may not know what HubSpot is. So what's the 10-second spiel?
Yeah, HubSpot's a software company. We make marketing, sales, and service software for small businesses.
Okay, cool. And would you say—
Wait a minute. Wait. Go another 5 seconds.
I think the thing that's different about us is that our aim with our software is really to help those small businesses grow, not just maintain, not just kind of turn the crank, but it's really a growth-oriented software system to help you get to the next level.
That's interesting because it's just like your selling philosophy, which is all results-based and help-oriented.
Right. Yeah, we do a lot of value-based selling, yeah.
It's very sophisticated, though. I mean, when we do an email mailing, I can tell you who opened it, who didn't open it, who acted on it, and if I go back and retarget, I don't hit the people twice.
Yeah, it's one of the things we use a lot with HubSpot. You and I both have HubSpot for our companies.
Yep.
Is the workflow feature. And what's really cool is you can create a chain of emails that get segmented every step of the way. So you opt in and you say you're a sales leader, you're getting this email, it keeps going. And then you click on one button and all of a sudden you're now in a new tree of emails. It's really sophisticated and cool.
Yeah, and it works.
We're trying to take this really powerful stuff and democratize it, right? Bring what used to be tools that only giant companies in the Fortune 1000 had and bring them to the, you know, Fortune 10 million of every business on the planet.
The Fortune 10 million, that's a big group.
Yeah, I love that. I love that.
You know, you should actually make plaques. This is, I'm in the Fortune 10 million and a customer of HubSpot, and people would hang it up on their wall.
That's a pretty cool idea, actually.
I like that.
I steal that one. Yeah, that's cool.
I like that.
Because, you know, you're in the Inc. 5000, like who gives a shit?
But Fortune 10 million, though.
If you're in the HubSpot 10 million, now I'm going to pay attention.
So, okay, so I want to talk about this concept of inbound marketing because I'm not sure, but did you guys like pioneer the inbound marketing trend or am I just imagining that?
Yeah, so the trend was something that was happening out in the world, right? It was something that was sort of just occurring, generally speaking, back, you know, started maybe 2005, 2010 at
the
latest.
So long ago.
Yeah, way back when.
At this point. Well, it's evolved a lot. It's moved quickly, right? And I think HubSpot was a well-timed company. I joined it in 2010, and inbound marketing was already, you know, on its way, right?
Yeah.
And I think that phrase, those two words, inbound marketing, or something that we spent a lot of time and effort coining. But we actually chose not to trademark it, you know, not to make it a brand asset of our company. We chose to sort of put it out there and let the market do what they wanted with it. I think in retrospect, that was a very good call because it was something that was just happening out in the world. And we've been a very happy beneficiary of this trend where, you know, the internet has really radically changed the way that people shop and buy.
So what's different now?
Oh, man. So if I think back 10 years ago to when, you know, to when this trend was starting, you know, and we used to get on sales calls with prospects for HubSpot, people that were thinking about buying our product. And, you know, they would have done their research, right? They would have Googled us.
Of course.
They would have read a couple blog posts. They would have, you know, seen a few things online. And they were reasonably well-educated, but a lot of the power still rested with the salesperson and with people like me who would get brought in to help with the close of the second voice. That was then. I think nowadays, when people approach that sales call, that first sales interaction, they're dramatically better educated because they have so much more information available to them. So they still read our blog posts. They still check out our website. But now, they read like 50 reviews of our software on review sites. Now, they talk to like 4 or 5 customers that they found through Facebook or LinkedIn or some referral network, right?
Or your group.
And it's just really different than the way it used to be, where maybe they had like a buddy that kind of knew who we were. Now we're so much more connected that it's so much easier to get recommendations from people, and word of mouth has become much more powerful.
And do people ask you a question like, why should I pick you? I'm already using Salesforce.
They'll ask questions like, you know, how do you stack up to competitors, stuff like that. Yeah.
Do you think, is Salesforce a competitor of yours or is it more the MailChimps of the world?
It really depends on the use case, to be honest. You know, there's some folks who really view us as an email provider. That's cool. We do that. There's some folks that view us as an entire CRM from marketing to sales service. That's cool too. We're sort of here for whatever folks want. You can slice off pieces of us.
It seems as though it's getting a little more complex, in the software world, that they've made the add-ons and they've made the software plugins that you can use so damn hard to use. You need a consulting firm to turn the software on.
I think honestly, like you're touching on something that for me as a software kind of practitioner is one of the things that keeps me up at night, which is how we price and package software. I just think it's a really complicated world out there. It's hard, and it makes it hard for buyers to understand what they're getting, and it makes it hard for sellers to find a clear path to value too. The clearer your pricing and packaging can be, typically the faster your sales velocity. But as you get bigger, complexity creeps in.
Are there certain strategies you use for pricing?
Yeah. We actually take a very iterative approach to pricing at HubSpot, which I think is a little unusual and perhaps a little dangerous too. It adds risk to the business. So when we launch a new product, you know, we'll do our market research, right, like normal, and we'll launch something, but we'll basically expect to iterate structurally on the price and package of that offering, you know, within a year, right? As we learn, as people give us feedback, and we sort of know that whatever we go to market with, like, cool, there it is today, but it's not going to be that way tomorrow. We're very generous on grandfathering. We try to make it work for our customers, but we understand the structure of the business is in motion over time.
I'm Jeremy Fulkerson, and I host the Hidden Stories podcast on the Sell or Die Network. In our podcast, we share stories of seemingly everyday people that are your neighbors, community leaders, entrepreneurs, survivors, mothers, fathers, and friends, but we don't share the regular dinner talk conversations. I believe we all want to be better spouses, friends, parents, and leaders. My hope is by hearing these hidden stories, it will give you the courage to be a better you. Find me on Apple Podcasts, iTunes, Stitcher, Overcast, or wherever you get your podcasts. There are links in the show notes to subscribe.
So the challenge that we have for our diehards out there, that some of them are forced to use it. You know, their boss makes a buy and someone calls them up on the phone on Monday and says, by the way, we're using HubSpot. And I want everybody to get the, you know, take the training and go to Cleveland and, you know, wherever the thing is going to be. And then there's not a positive interaction from the very get-go. How do you change that?
Yeah, nobody likes to have tools forced on them, right? Mm-hmm. You want to choose your own tools. You want to have agency in the process. And even if, frankly, you end up with the same tool, the path that you took to get there actually matters, having the choice.
Of course.
for us, it's about providing that training and enablement in as many ways as we possibly can. So we do in-person classroom training. We do a ton of online video. We do online text stuff. You can have calls with us one-on-one. And we hope that by sort of matching everybody's individual learning style, we can make the change as basically painless as possible for those cases when it is kind of foisted on you by your manager or something. But it certainly happens, and it takes a lot of work to sometimes overcome that for us.
That's cool. So you pioneered the HubSpot Academy team, which I think is like those tools, those online videos that help you learn how to use it and what to do. Is that correct?
Yeah. So yeah, that's a big, big part of how we educate, HubSpot Academy. Yeah.
And first of all, I've watched those videos. I've totally dorked out on them. I probably have spent hours watching those videos, and they're really good. How do you think that changes service and the level of service that you're able to provide?
Yeah, good question. So we have an insane amount of help content. We're a big company, right? But we've found that help content in any form, whether it's a simple FAQ, a knowledge base, or a full-blown kind of academy, you know, like certification structure, right? Those just basically enable the people that work at our company to do two things. They can use those as a backstop and send resources and sort of economize their time. But two, hopefully that when a person that we employ actually gets on the phone, whether it's a salesperson or a service person or a support person, their work is a little elevated because the person they're talking to on the other end, they already know some of the basics, right? And so if a customer or a prospect has watched a few of those videos and they approach a service call or a sales call, right? Now we can talk about strategy. We can talk about value-based selling. We don't need to talk about nitty-gritty of the features as much. That's the real benefit. And to us, one of the big surprises in making all this like quote-unquote service or customer-centric content was how much it helped our salespeople sell. Like our knowledge base gets, you know, over a million views a month, and a lot of those are in pre-sales environments.
Wow, that's pretty cool.
Yeah.
And if I recall correctly, because I haven't had to contact support in a long time, but if I recall correctly, your support is 24/7.
Yep, it's 24/7. It's global at this point. It wasn't always that way. It took some work to get there, but yeah, now
how do you feel that changes the customer interaction where they can get a response right away?
Yeah, I mean, to be honest, I kind of think it's expected nowadays. I mean, when I go to work with a company, you know, I stack them up against a company whose service I really like Amazon or something. And the fact that they're a small business or a medium-sized business doesn't much matter to me as a buyer, as a consumer. Like, you know, if you're not as good as Amazon, I'm not going to buy from you. And so I think 24/7 service, being accessible in a variety of ways and kind of looking to take some of those tricks that bigger companies have and bring them to small businesses, that's super important because the playing field, you know, it's a little too level sometimes between the really big guys and the small guys. So for us, it's a must as a kind of mid-sized company.
We, as a small company, have answered our phone 24/7, 365 with a live person on the second ring by utilizing an outside answering service. And I cannot tell you how happy it makes our customers to get a real voice of a real person without a bullshit, you know, please dial the 9 things that'll because our options have recently changed a year and a half ago, and we want to make sure that we serve you the best. So please select from among the following 9 options.
So
I think that your ability to connect as a customer is what frustrates the hell out of many, many.
Well, yeah, I was going to say, like, I don't think it is the standard to have 24/7, 365 service anymore. I think a lot of these software companies, especially ones that I've been dealing with, have no way to contact them by phone. You can chat with them, which I'm a phone person, so I get annoyed. Or you can email them and get a response in 48 to 72 hours. And
which they brag about, by the way.
Yeah. Well, we respond to every email. And then you get half an answer and you have to email again and then wait another 3 days. That's not helpful to me. So I actually think the level of service that you're providing is way above the playing field, the standard.
Yeah. I think it's just a lesson for us in like know thy customer, right? Mm-hmm. So we started doing phone support because we didn't know any better. We were just so ignorant about how to do it that we said, oh, we have a phone number, call it, we'll help you, right? And it probably went to one of our founders, you know, cell phones or something like that. And so phone support for us was something we just started doing early on. But as it turned out, we sell software to marketers and salespeople, and now recently service people. But the majority of our users are marketers and salespeople like us, right? They want to talk on the phone. They don't want to chat. They don't want to wait. There's a tyranny of the immediate, and they need it now, right? And so what we've seen is that that phone support, that immediacy is really, really important.
So the challenge that you have is immediacy. And I want it now. I want it within 30 seconds, and I want it free.
Mm-hmm.
You?
The same. Everybody wants it the same. I mean, there are probably certain customer segments out there, maybe some developers or like an engineer type that would prefer not to use the phone, right? And I think if that's your customer base and that's who you sell to, cool. Know them and know what to tailor to them. But a lot of people still really value immediacy, still really value one-to-one communication, and still frankly value the phone.
When I see someone that guarantees a response within 24 to 48 hours, I want to kill them. I mean, I don't want to deal with that.
Kill is maybe a hard word, a harsh word. I think what you're saying is you don't want to do business with them.
Same thing. Sell or die.
Jeffrey, what's that in your coffee cup?
What do you think it is, Jen? It's Death Wish coffee. It's the only coffee I drink. Death Wish is the world's strongest coffee, and the world's strongest salesperson needs the world's strongest coffee.
Jeffrey and I drink it, and diehards, you need to be drinking it too. It'll help you wake up and smell the order forms. They have 100% no bullshit money back guarantee, so go get your first bag or first box of K-Cups of the world's strongest coffee at deathwishcoffee.com.
So what does an order form smell like?
What are some of the biggest mistakes that people make when they begin to market their products and services?
Yeah, so I actually have a lot of conversations that to me line up with this. So people know me as a HubSpot person. They associate me with inbound marketing. And they come to me and they say, hey, I just started this company, or, you know, we're getting off the ground. We're kind of in that growing phase. We're going to do inbound marketing. It's going to be great. I say, okay, cool. Like, how are you going to do that? And they say, oh, we got a big budget. You know, we're going to put like 700 grand to this thing or whatever. And I say, okay, awesome.
That would be $350,000 per lead.
Yeah, exactly. And as we start talking about it, right, what they do is they subscribe to a school of thought. Whether it's inbound marketing or account-based marketing or you know, targeted advertising.
Hang on
a
second.
They subscribe to that.
They subscribe to a school of thought is a brilliant statement because it involves training by its very definition.
Mm-hmm.
The word school is there. And so whatever they may be in the first grade or they may be in the third grade, but it's a school of thought. And your job is to influence their thinking, correct?
Absolutely. And some folks get really, really bought in on one of those schools of thought, and it may or may not be the right one for their business, mm-hmm. right? And as with all things, you know, a little bit of column A, a little bit of column B, a little bit of discipline A, a little bit of discipline B is typically the right way to go. And so I talk to a lot of folks who are super in love with one form of their go-to-market strategy. And I find that a lot of my job, when I advise early stage companies at least, is to try to bend that thinking a little bit and just nuance it and say, okay, like that's important, that's good, but let's talk about your target market. Okay, there's only, you know, 5,000 potential buyers for you in the US. Do you really need a massive content marketing strategy that looks like, you know, a giant website? Maybe, maybe not, right? Maybe you just need to do more of a sales enablement strategy, find those key pressure points on the critical path to the sale and handle it differently, right? And I think that a lot of folks, they get really enamored with one school of thought and they kind of put on blinders to other things, and that actually limits their success.
I think what they try and do is they try and prove that school of thought. So now they're tied into inbound marketing. I have to do inbound marketing. And then they find all the articles that support that school of thought.
Just like everything else, we often look for ways to confirm our biases, right? And and that can be dangerous. So I'm kind of a skeptic when it comes to all that. I think a blended approach is good. And, you know, as a small company, your calories are really expensive. And so you need to make sure that you're getting the maximum return on your effort. And in order to do that, you need to take the best of breed from multiple places.
So when you're trying to influence their thinking, what are some of the strategies you use? Because I can see how that could relate to our sales, our diehards, and who have to influence their customers' thinking on a daily basis.
Yeah, I mean, I ask a ton of questions, right? I mean, I'm a consultant kind of by trade, right? And the place where I start is with question asking. And I'll have a conversation with folks and it can go a half hour, 40 minutes. I'll make no statements, right? I'll just ask questions and keep the conversation going. And my questions are often Socratic in method, right? And they're sort of leading questions a little bit. I'm trying to extract from the person I'm talking to how they're thinking and find where the gaps are in their view of the world. And so I'll ask, like, you know, all right, what is your target market? Do you think that those people are, you know, doing activity X, Y, and Z in order to find you? And just sort of keep pulling at that string. And frankly, if you get good at that, it doesn't come off as condescending. It doesn't come off as pedantic or time wasting because the person that's answering the questions is learning through their own verbalized responses.
I kind of like pedantic. I grew up with pedantic. I sold in New York. The entire city is pedantic.
Yeah.
But let me throw this value statement at you. Diehards, if you're looking at trying to take on a marketing deal that you want to evaluate the capability of it, I think that if I were Michael, I would start my sales presentation by saying, look, I'm going to teach you how to get your phone to ring with qualified customers. Oh, okay. Well, that's exactly what I was hoping for. But that's inbound marketing described a different way. So it's a matter of not just the words that you use, but how those words impact the listener. So there's a, you know, you can talk to me all about the new words of the sales world, but I want to just know how to get my phone to ring with qualified customers.
To me, once you can dangle that value statement out there, right, and get the other person excited about it, or even better, get honestly jointly excited about it, that's when you can start to pull the thread. Okay, so when was the last time your phone rang like that? How did that call get created? If you backtrack that, what experiences did that prospect have before they decided to call you? How do they find your phone number? You can start asking these questions to pull back and kind of peel the onion on how that call actually happened and reveal hopefully a strategy and understand where they're coming from and their thinking.
Yeah. There's one missing link though, and this is a pretty interesting thing. When you get that inbound phone call, how qualified is the human being on the other end of the phone to actually make the deal happen? What's the training level? Like, I got you 10 calls. How many sales did you make? Well, we sent out 3 proposals, and we expect to have those answers in just a couple of weeks. In other words, none.
Yeah.
Do you provide that additional service?
So as far as sales training, we do a little bit. The challenge is, you know, selling has a lot to do with the specifics of your product and service. So there are certain techniques around, you know, identifying BANT, budget authority, need timing, or something we call GPCT, goals, plans, challenges, and timelines. So they work differently well for different types of businesses, right? If you're selling widgets, it's different than selling a service. So we do a little bit of that. We try to give people mental models that they can apply, right? As opposed to give them the kind of core sales training techniques.
Cool. That's a very important part of the process, though. I mean, if you're an inbound marketeer and you get your phone to ring 100 times, how many sales do you make as a result of those 100?
Yeah, it's a really good question. I think a lot of it comes down to salesmanship, and there's a tradecraft to it, right? And knowing your product, knowing your customer, knowing your market is really, really still key for salespeople to actually take things over the line.
You got to be able to get the money. At some point, it's about the guy calls up. Okay, great. Now, give me your credit card. Send me your check. Wire me the dollars.
So, talking about money, I'm starting a business or I'm a salesperson that wants to individually market my business or I'm an entrepreneur. How do I know what percentage to allocate to marketing?
Oh,
good question.
Is there a known percentage?
There's no real answer to that because if your budget's a dollar, it's not enough, right? it's like 6,000% or whatever, right? I think a couple of things though. One is marketing has gotten dramatically less expensive to get to table stakes over the last decade.
Agreed.
So table stakes is a website, you know, a Facebook profile, this kind of stuff. We're talking like it's like less than $100 a month, right? It's really, really inexpensive to get going with that. If you're selling products online or like a storefront, right? services like your shopping cart probably take care of a lot of that stuff even for you. I think that when you think about doing that marketing as an entrepreneur, you got to get to table stakes first because there's just a legitimacy bar you need to pass there. And that's going to involve getting your social profiles pinned down, getting your website going, and getting an email list going. Just like really basic, basic stuff, right? And then you need to understand your product, understand your market, and figure out what are the leverage points in there. Is your market somebody that wants to buy through website chat? Right? Okay, then do website chat. But don't do website chat if you're selling management consulting services to CEOs of farming companies, right? That's just not going to work. Think about your buyer, think about your tool set, understand both, and try to match it. And so what percentage? I don't know. But you need to find the leverage points, and that has to do with understanding your market.
But in order to make that sale, you have to have something compelling enough for the buyer to want to buy, regardless of what channel you choose to communicate.
Yeah. The product needs to actually be good too.
Yeah, I mean, I have to perceive the value or I ain't going to talk to you for more than 3 minutes.
Yep. Articulating that value, I think, is part of what you do in a website and a social profile and all that kind of table stakes stuff. And it needs to be tight. You need to know it. You need to battle test it, right? Talk to your family. Talk to your friends. Talk to people that have no idea what it is you're up to.
Talk to both your friends.
well, two of them. Yeah.
And what about posting value messages with the right words in it that some CEO or CFO or COO might search for and find?
Yeah. SEO is not dead, right? It works really, really well. I think it's a piece of a strategy. Some folks believe that their prospects don't use search. They're wrong, right? So if you're selling to physicians or something and you think, oh, these people don't have time to use search. Oh, no. They search, right? Everybody does.
I searched three times this morning. I'm looking for some things specifically, but I searched for it and I found it.
I think we search all day and we don't even realize how much we're Googling all day.
And search is getting easier. Like it's happening through Alexa. It's
just
happening through
Siri.
Right. You don't even need a question mark anymore.
Yeah. Like somebody's probably listening to us right now, searching stuff based off what we're doing. Right. Yep. And it's just that there's a matter of fact here that, you know, Google is incredibly good at what they do. Look at their market cap. It's working. Right. And search is everywhere. And so you got to believe the search matters. It's just a piece of a strategy, though. And to me, there's search in terms of putting the right terms in, you know, your blog post to get organic search. There's search in terms of paid search. Right. There's a variety of ways to take that search concept and make it work for your business.
So you've talked about a lot of these approaches and how they're just a piece of the puzzle. If I'm just getting started or I want to really dig in deeper and go forward with more marketing, what are the critical elements of that piece? Like what makes up that bundle of marketing activities?
Good question. So I think the first component is just your presence. Talked about that before. It's like website, social profiles, just own the real estate, right? Largely so nobody else owns it in the future. So put your mark there. That's number one. Number two is articulate that value and do that in an organic way. So start to create content that talks about what you're up to. And this, it's sweat equity more than it is dollar-based equity, right? And then third is about actually promoting that content out. And that's a paid strategy. And for a relatively low amount of money, especially on Facebook, you can do ridiculously good targeting. It's almost like crazy today to not have some amount of paid, especially on Facebook, to get to your target market.
We agree with you.
Yep. Cool. That's great.
And once you have that and you start to get some kind of response to it, you can refine it all the way down to the edge. I mean, it's amazing what you can do and who you can target and who you can retarget on Facebook.
I love when I see an ad that's like specifically for me because I'm like, they did such a good job that I will buy that.
Like, how the hell did they know?
How did they know I want another pair of APLs?
Right.
Exactly. Sometimes I'm just in awe of it, and I'm like, "Man, that's a good marketer." Really
exactly.
And I'm like, "What? Congrats, guys! Like, you got me, right?"
Yeah, exactly.
I'll tell you something else. You're not afraid to click on that link.
No.
The fear is gone from those days when you saw 5,000 banner ads before you clicked one. No one clicked on a banner ad. They sold the shit out of them, but no one clicked on them.
Yeah. Nowadays, we've just moved like light years beyond that. And advertising, you know, especially search-based advertising and this kind of audience targeting stuff, it actually works. It's pretty remarkable.
So, Michael, this is awesome, and it's clear you know your stuff. Where do people go to get more information about HubSpot? What do they do if they want more?
Yeah, sure. So if you want to learn about HubSpot, you can go to HubSpot.com/new, N-E-W, see all the new stuff that we're up to. If you want to stay in touch with me, I'm a marketer by trade, so LinkedIn, Twitter, hit me up. I'm there.
All right, awesome. And we'll put links to your social profiles in our show notes.
We'll do all kinds of stuff for you. Yeah. We'll promote the hell out of you because we actually like you.
Yeah, this was awesome. Thank you so much.
Cool. Yeah, appreciate it. This is a cool chat. I like your guys' style. I listened to one or two of the podcasts before. I was like, this is going to be a good time.
Yeah, this is fun. Diehards, thank you for listening to Sell or Die. If you like what you heard, make sure to subscribe and rate this podcast. Give it a star in Overcast and tell a friend.
Tell both your friends. Just don't tell your competition. You can follow me on Twitter at Gittimer and Jen at Sales in Any Minute.
Send your sales questions to sellordie@gittimer.com. We'll be back next week with Motivation Monday and another amazing guest.
Until then, I'm Jeffrey Gittimer.
And I'm Jen Gluckow.
And we're reminding you to get out there and sell or die.
Even if your ass falls off. Sell or Diehards. If you love the show, make sure you've subscribed.
And if you've subscribed, make sure you rate us on iTunes or give us a star on Overcast.
And if you've done all of that, tell a friend about the best sales podcast on the planet. Or better yet, tell both your friends.
And if you've done all of that, well, you're a true sell or diehard, and we thank you.